Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones. Call in and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time, yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Thank God it's Friday. American. If it's Friday and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern Standard Time, then it has to be Southern Sense. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And at the moment, my co-host seems to be MIA. So if anyone out there knows where Cool Mike is, kick him in the butt, tell him it's 2 in the afternoon, and tell him to get himself on over here. You know, this has been a crazy, crazy week. Last time we were here on the air, it was Tuesday. It was primary day here in South Carolina. And to my great and utter disappointment, Lindsey Graham won the primary. He won it 59%, which means 41% of the people here in South Carolina voted against him. And just this afternoon before going on air, I reached out to one of the candidates, Lee Bright, and I put a little bird in his ear, a little buzz, and said, hey, listen, why don't you try to do this on an independent ticket? You can still take him down. So instead of having 6 people running against him, you'll have an independent, a Democrat, and Lindsey Graham. So let's cross our fingers and hope that little bird is chirping away at him, and maybe he may consider a run on the independent ticket. I can only hope. And honestly, I did support Bill Connor, and he did not take as many out of the percentage as I hoped he would. But there has to be another answer. There has to be anything but Lindsey Graham. So I'm not giving up my dump Lindsey Graham fetish just yet. There is always a hope when there is a prayer. So welcome to Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. We're also up on TeaPartyCommunity.com and Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, as well as Patriot Radio Network. And if you're fed up with Facebook, hop on over to TeaPartyCommunity.com. It works like Facebook, without all the BS, without all the restrictions, and they try to keep it with like-minded individuals, conservatives and Republicans and independents and libertarians, so you all have a place there and no trolls are allowed. So we can exchange our messages with like-minded people without the harassment. But then again, you know, sometimes a little of that troll harassment is worthwhile because it's always fun to piss off a liberal at least once a day. That's my motto. Piss off a liberal once a day and have some fun doing it. And our guest today will be calling in at half past the hour. Last I spoke to him, he was on his way into the dentist, and let's hope he hasn't got a mouthful of Novocaine and he'll be able to speak with us. But our guest today is Nick Searcy. He's an actor and director as well as a acting coach. He also stars in the TV show Justified up on FX, going into its last season, 5 seasons. So he'll be joining us at half past the hour. For those of you that are new to listening to us and to those who continue to, I thank you all. We got Sweet Sue listening in on the phone line, and she's sounding very healthy, and I'm glad she sounds very happy and healthy, and our prayers still go with her. Let's keep her on the road to recovery. And she's out there tweeting and Facebooking, so she's back in the fray, guys. And I want to welcome the people up in the chat room and especially my friend Kel, because we're going to raise a little hell very soon. Those who listen know that we start off each show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And when we last broadcast on Tuesday, news was just coming over the wires about 5 U.S. Army Rangers who were killed by friendly fire on Monday, June 9th, in southern Afghanistan. So today's show is going to be dedicated to these brave men that lost their lives fighting for our freedom. And it goes out to Sergeant Scott Studdeman, 24, Private Aaron Tupton, 19, Justin Helton, 25, Justin Klaus, 22, and one unnamed Ranger pending family notification. And this is from U.S. News World Report. 5 American troops killed in a friendly fire airstrike included an Illinois soldier who went to Afghanistan a month after his father died, an Ohio man who was engaged to be married, a California Green Beret who only deployed in January, and a Washington State man who loved the outdoors. Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby said, the 5 were killed Monday during a security operation in southern Afghanistan. Officials said an airstrike was called in after the unit was ambushed by the Taliban. It was one of the deadliest friendly fire incidents in the nearly 14 years of war. Family representatives of Aaron Tupton of Illinois and Justin Helton of Ohio told Associated Press that military members came to their families' doors in the middle of the night to deliver the news of the deaths. Relatives and local schools on Wednesday confirmed the deaths of Justin Klaus of Washington and Staff Sergeant Scott Studdermund of California. The other victim has yet to been identified. Here's a look at the lives of Tupton, Helton, Studdermund, and Klaus. Aaron Tupton, only 19. Family members of Tupton remembered him as a kind-hearted man who aspired to a career in the military or law enforcement. Aaron was predisposed to serve. He was very keen to be in the military, his uncle Jack Winter said. He was quite proud to be there. It was the second death of a loved one for the family this year. Tupton of the Illinois city of Mokena, about 40 miles southwest of Chicago, was set to leave for Afghanistan in February, but his gravely ill father died that month, and he stayed for the funeral. He deployed in March. Tupton was a graduate of Lincoln Way East High in Frankfort, Illinois, and loved the outdoors, especially fishing. Family members at the home Tuesday circulated a picture of Tupton as a young child sitting next to his father in a fishing boat. He was something somewhat rare in youth culture today. In a word, I would summarize what he had as class, Winter said of his nephew. So rarely now do we see someone like that who truly does have class, who's polite, humble, loyal, who's a kind-hearted soul and generous.
Topton was the youngest of three children. Justin Helton, 25. Helton had been in the Army since 2010, but had been in Afghanistan for only 2 months, according to cousin Mandy Hilton. It was his first deployment, and he expected to be home in about 6 months, she said. She said her cousin specialized in dealing with explosives and was based at a Fort Bragg, North Carolina. She said he was also engaged. His parents lived in Beaver, a two-hour drive east of Cincinnati, Ohio. He was a great boy, so full of life and outgoing, she said. He loved hunting and the outdoors. The 2006 graduate of Beaver Eastern High School was known to friends and family as Buck and was a quiet leader. Robert Day, his high school basketball coach, told WCMH-TV in Columbus. Tom Haddle, he had known Hilton since grade school, told the station that he had messaged his friends on Facebook just last week. He said Tom was really dragging over there. He said, just don't worry, you'll be home soon. And to be safe, Haddle said. Then I told him I loved him. Scott Studemund, 24. Staff Sergeant Studemund of Pasadena, California, was deployed to Afghanistan in January and was set to return home in August. His mother is former eHarmony CEO Janie Studemund, and his father, Woody Studemund, an economics professor at Occidental College in Los Angeles. Studemund was a 2008 graduate of Flintwood Preparatory School in the Los Angeles foothill suburb of La Canada, Flintridge. Both schools confirmed his death Wednesday with permission from the family. Studemund was a brave, virtuous patriot who played football and ran track at Flintridge and loved military history and a good debate, the school said in a statement. When I think about Scott's service, I think of the founding fathers. A virtuous man must be prepared to risk his life, fortune, and sacred honor for his country, Headmaster Peter Bachman said in a statement. Though undersized for defensive position, he made our defense go, football coach and science teacher Glenn Beattie said. He was aggressive, quick, and wouldn't let anyone block him or dominate him. He would fight through anything and would not let himself be defeated. Studemund played football at Pfizer College in Claremont, California for a year, then took leave to pursue his life's dream to become a Green Beret, the Flintridge statement said. Pasadena Mayor Bill Bogard has requested that flags in the city be flown at half-staff in his honor. Justin Klaus, 22. Klaus of the tiny town of Sprague, Washington, loved sports and the outdoors, family members said. He played basketball and football at Sprague High School, about 30 miles of Spokane. In basketball, he was the team captain and most valuable player his senior year. Klaus enrolled in the Army shortly after graduating. Orville Klaus said Wednesday his grandson was an awesome man who loved fishing and hunting. He was planning to leave the military next spring and get married. He was outgoing yet quiet, Orville Klaus said. He was always a hardworking and ambitious kid. Justin Klaus' parents departed Wednesday for a military base in Delaware, where his body was returned to the U.S., Orville Klaus said. Residents of the town of 550 people gave them a community send-off Wednesday morning. Klaus enlisted in the Army in 2010 and was on his second tour in Afghanistan. And there is a fifth Ranger who died in that friendly fire incident. We don't know his name. We don't know his family. But our prayers go out to them and to the other four families here. We grieve with them. These brave men who quietly serve our nation, who do the bidding of what our politicians ask them to do, who fight for our liberties and our freedoms. We say our prayers for them and wish them the best. To them, we dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. To all the men and women who have served, who are serving, and will serve. And to our first response, God bless you.
fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud. I stand for my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand for.
America. That was a tough dedication to get through, especially with everything that's been going on this week. And I am proud to welcome aboard. Someone did wake him up. Someone did kick him in the butt. My co-host, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Well, good afternoon. Sorry to be late. They lost power, of course, at about quarter two. But I am driving around just so I may hit a dead spot. I'm here, and that was a... Annie, that was just a, you know, each dedication is it's just so, I don't know, it makes us feel so grateful. We've been doing this for years now, and each person is just, it's almost like they're an extended family member to us. Great job doing it. You know, it's bad enough for people who are listening. Annie gets choked up when she does it, and then you go ahead and do two. It's like the double tearjerker there. So, but
yeah,
great commitments. Two great people. Imagine the guy left college football wanting to be a Green Beret. I mean, what can you say about these heroes?
Yeah, and the worst part was it was five that we lost all in one horrific friendly fire incident, which is under investigation. And it's so tough, you know, we don't know what caused it, whether or not someone gave out the wrong coordinates or if it was faulty equipment or human error. But, you know, you take that in consideration with what is going on right now in Afghanistan and Iraq, the horrific terrorist attacks as they're trying to regain their caliphate. And there's guys that are sitting home here with body parts missing, with their minds scrambled, that were over there fighting for their these people, they're for their freedoms and for our safety. And for what? For what right now? They're all asking. And now we've got five servicemen that we're going to be burying this week. And the families are all asking, for what? What was this all about? Why?
Yeah.
And we have a president who, every time you turn around, he is finding another way to break down our nation, to destroy it. And it's sometimes you just want to throw your hands up in the air and say, I give up. But I'm not going to give up. If brave men don't give up, then why should I give up? You know?
And I think the voters in Virginia gave us reason why not to give up this week.
Yeah, and unfortunately the voters here in South Carolina let us all down. But I mentioned before you came on the air that I reached out to Lee Bright's campaign because he had the highest percentage of votes from all the other six candidates running against Lindsey Graham. And I put a little buzz in the ear of his campaign manager to say, why don't you get him on the independent ticket? Because that way he's not going to have to worry about, you know, kowtowing to the GOP machine here in South Carolina. He can go and say, screw you all. I'm going to run an independent ticket. I'm going to go after him tooth and nail. I am going to slay this guy. And I think he should do it. And the other five candidates should get behind him because they said prior to the primary, whoever comes out of the primary and goes into the runoff against Lindsey Graham, they would all support. Call those chips in. Call those chips in and said, listen, you said if I made it to the runoff, well, we didn't have a runoff, but I got the highest percentage of votes, so why don't you now throw all of your backing against me? Because 41% of the people here in South Carolina said they did not want Lindsey Graham. Do it.
Yeah, well, Lindsey Graham knew what he was doing the way he rigged the primary, but so be it. That's the way it works.
Yeah, and Joe Goldner is reminding everyone that tomorrow is Flag Day. And I have to admit, yesterday when I came back from running my errands, I happened to walk past, because I have a flag hanging off the tree in the front yard. And I'm going, the flag looks a little weird. And I walked up to it, and I found that there's some rips in it, right exactly along where the red and white stripes are. So you didn't notice it unless the wind took the flag and then the rip opened, then you only noticed. So tomorrow our flag is coming down. It's going to go over to the VFW hall to be properly disposed of, and a new flag will go in its place. So tomorrow, hang your flags high and fly them high. Oh, man.
Be very proud.
Ah, it sounds like you just went into an echo chamber. Hey, listen, we've got a fantastic guest coming up. It's going to be Nick Searcy from Justified up on FX. And we've got in the chat room, we've got our friends Doc Jones and Joe Goldner and Kel. And hanging in on the line, we've got Thomas and Sue. So if Thomas and Sue want to add into the conversation, just press 1 and we'll bring you back on. But we got a lot to go over today, a heck of a lot to go over today. Wow. And I'm just looking at some of the stuff that is going on in the news. And, we got Eric Cantor that got kicked out of office. Uh-huh. Let's see. Now, I'm reading a story here that the shame of the swap. Allison Spann was just 9 when she learned her father, Johnny Michael Mike Spann, a U.S. Marine turned CIA operative, had become the first American killed in the war in Afghanistan. And she learned that her country had swapped the Taliban leader responsible for his death to free Bowie Burgdell. Now, that is a sin. That is an absolute sin. And did I lose my co-host? And I think I lost my co-host. All right, well, we've got a caller coming in on the line, area code 519. I do believe this is Cal. Is this my friend Cal?
Annie, how are you today?
Oh, I'm all right. Just looks like Mike is having problems with his phone and electricity, so he's going to be popping in and out. So anyone find a place for Mike to plug his phone in?
I wanted to ask Cool Mike about the Playboy lemonade. Darn it.
Hey, don't worry about it.
Oh, boy.
For 3 years now, he's been promising me a case of that Playboy energy drink, and I have yet to get it. For 3 years.
It comes in bottles and cans.
But it's not sold here in South Carolina. So.
And, yeah, and I was doing a supermarket search for him about a year ago. And I was looking for it on the shelves, and it's not sold in Canada. And I'm very, very sad because I like Playboy bunnies.
Oh, no. Are you going lesbian on me?
I don't know. I think I'm just a bi lover of people.
Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat. Yeah, exactly. But I have to say, it's always an honor to be with you, Annie, because, ladies and gentlemen, you really don't want to leave Annie and me in the same room because we do create havoc.
Well,
maybe later on we'll talk about Michelle Obama, the hermaphrodite.
Oh, man. Don't even get me started and about, you know, the little man in the boat being backwards.
And ladies and gentlemen, we might even expose that the two daughters are actually rent-a-kids.
Now, wait a minute. Now, I was listening to Andrew, I think it was Andrew Wilkow the other day, and there is a school district, I believe it's in the Los Angeles area, California. Of course, California would do this. Actually, it was Miami Beach. Wrong state, wrong coast. Miami Beach school district, where they're saying that, hey, not the schools, it was actually the government, Miami-Dade government. They included on their health insurance for the employees a sex change. A transgender change.
That's right. So, in Florida, that's exactly what they did. And all funded by you, the taxpayer. Isn't that just lovely? Yes. That is going to be part of the health plan. If you feel sexually confused and then you decide on a gender, you are, as an employer, to obligate that employee and pay for their sex change operation or transition from male to female, female to male. Yep, that's right, Annie. Isn't it amazing? God bless America.
God bless America. Because now this guy, it's a great recruiting tool to get employees, people to work for the city, right? So now Joe goes in and he's, you know, stocking the basketball court with basketballs. And Joe decides to become Josie. So he stays in the employment just long enough to have the sex change transition. Then he quits and says, thank you. You just paid for a $40,000 operation. Care of the taxpayers.
That's
and
right.
And now Obamacare is going to pay for my hormones for the rest of my life, so I'm set.
Yep. You've got it, Annie. Welcome to Obamacare. And very, very selective programs that are endorsed under this administration. Yes, and Joe will become Joni. And Joni will walk away with its new boobs. Say thank you.
Talk about a pair of boobs. Jeez.
I just got a, yep. And my dick has been turned into a vagina. I love America. I love America.
Puts a new meaning to the vagina monologues. Oh, my goodness.
What happens in a country where we got money to burn? We're trillions in debt, but we got money to burn.
Cool, Steve. We got you back.
Cool, Mike. And it looks like Thomas is raising
his
hand.
Mike,
wants
did
to
I say cool,
comment.
Steve? Oh, I'm speaking with Steve on another page. Cool, Mike, my apologies.
It's no problem. We're rocking and rolling in this show already.
Annie and myself, yes.
there was a, I believe it was in Mankato, Minnesota, where the individual who became a guy on the taxpayers is now suing because his libido wasn't large enough. He wanted to go into the porn business. So now he's suing.
Get out of here.
And I think to myself, you know what? All right, milk us the taxpayer. Yeah, it was a, you know, a, I don't know what branch of government the individual worked for, but whatever the case may be, okay, whatever. But, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you know, in every way, shape, or form, everyone's always looking for it for free. Everything.
All right,
will,
All right, we've got Thomas in on the line, but I also do believe our guest is calling in. Let me see if I can get him up here on the line. Mr. Searcy, are you with us?
I am with you.
Well, I don't know if you wanted to step into this middle of this conversation. We started off with talking about the new Miami-Dade County ruling that allows the sex change on the taxpayer's dime, and it just started downward after that.
Well, yes, I, you know, my sex change is years in the past, and it's not an issue that I've paid much attention to since then. I mean, mine was so successful, but, you know, it was done with private money, not public money. So.
Oh, my goodness. I knew, I had a funny
feeling. Oh, I bet you're too sexy for your cat now.
Right.
And Mr. Searcy, it's an honor to speak with you. I'm Kel Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger, and I monopolize Annie and Cool Mike every once in a while on their program, but it is an honor to speak with you, sir.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm honored that you asked me to come on.
Well, it is our pleasure, too. And, you know, I really did not follow the show Justified. I have so many different things I do. I don't always get a chance to watch, you know, TV shows. And I came across you one day because you went after some actress up on Twitter, and you piqued my curiosity. And then I started reading about you a little bit more, and then that's when I started, you know, see if I can get a hold of you and get you on. And then our friend Thomas, who also happens to be hanging on the line, had interviewed you, and I said, no, I cannot let this guy go past. I cannot let you go past because – the two, if you and I were to sit on a bar stool together and have a couple of cocktails, I swear we would probably clear the place out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I do that by myself a lot. But, yeah, it'd be fun to have somebody help me do it. But, you know, it sounds to me like you really need to get your priorities in order if you don't have time to watch Justified. Now, that is required viewing.
Well, then I'll just have to catch a lot of the reruns so I can catch up, because I understand you're now in the final season.
We're going to start shooting the final season in October. They're trying to come up with it right now. The writers are thinking it up as we speak.
Oh, okay. So I'm just hoping they're not going to kill you off in it.
No, well, basically, it's the final season, and, you know, if you been watching the show, we've killed almost everybody in Hollywood already. So I think that they're just going to finish us all off. We're just going to kill everybody in the final season. Done with it, you know.
Oh, man, it sounds like Obama's the one writing the script.
No, it'd be really boring then. It would be filled with a lot of ums and let me be clears and make no mistakes. And, you know, nobody would want to read that script.
Well, I want to let you know.
I'm sorry,
Annie?
I lost there.
So I have my phone and electricity problem. All right, I said I also have my co-host, but he'll be coming in and out as we do problems with the lesson. You're not behaving, child. It's run by a little organization. I was going over some of the stuff that you've been putting up on the internet, and you actually blow me away because it sounds as if you're inside my head half the time when I go after these trolls that try to call in and upset the show. One of the things someone put up on my Facebook page was a picture of you from the TV show, and you wrote, "The content you're attempting to view has been blocked by Nick Searcy because you are a leftist dumb shit. To regain access to this content, call your cable company or dish provider and ask them how you can learn about basic economics, foreign policy, American history, human nature, and everything else that leftists are completely ignorant about. Then contact Mr. Searcy, who no longer a dumb shit, and perhaps he'll take pity on you and resume your access to this content. Probably not, though.
You know, yeah, I had some fun with that. You know, a lot of these things, I must say, I have great writers out there on the internet, and some of these things people just make and send me, and I just sort of go, yeah, I like that, I'll put that up, and so that was one of them. Like, you know, some of them are ghostwritten for me, much like a Hillary Clinton book.
Oh, now you got me into another topic. A friend of mine, I'm trying to see if I can find it here. I think it was Jason Matera wrote this, and just bear with me as I'm thumbing through all the stuff I printed out last night. But he went over the reviews from the book, and I have it here, and some of them are just too hysterical. And I'm trying to find it, just bear with me. And I've got you have no idea all the stuff. When I do a show, I normally have about 2 or 3 inches of paper just from all the research I do. And
I can imagine.
Oh, here it is.
Yeah.
Here it is. The top 30 most hilarious Amazon.com reviews of the book. And some of the stuff is just too funny. How did she survive leaving the White House dead broke? They could hardly pay the multiple mortgages for the multiple houses and sent Chelsea to Columbia, carpetbag in New York, or anything. And no help from United Way, Salvation Army, or pantsuits for the homeless. And, you know, she's doing all these, going around with all these speaking engagements, and I'm wondering who the heck is picking out her clothes. It's almost as if she would look better wearing a muumuu. Do you remember the muumuus, the late 60s, early 70s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think she doesn't wear those because it makes her look too much like Kim Jong-un.
And what's up with Kim Jong-un going over to the Weather Bureau and telling him he doesn't like their weather reports? They got to change them.
Yeah, well, socialists think they can change the weather. You know, they think that here in America too. They just go over and go, we don't like this weather. If we just sort our trash better and drive different vehicles, we can change it. So,
oh man, it's amazing some of the things they come up with. And now we've got this catastrophe that's going on over in Afghanistan and Iraq, and I live in South Carolina. I'm in the heart of what they call the Tri-Command. I've got the Parris Island Recruit Training Depot for the Marine Corps. I've got the Marine Corps Air Station. I've got the Naval Hospital. I've got Shaw Air Force Base nearby. And all these men and these women that I pass every single day, and I look at them and I'm saying, what is our nation doing to them? What are they doing?
It really is a shame, and, you know, it's the thing about it that's really disturbing is that, you know, people say that Obama has made a mistake or that he's misjudged the Iraq situation, and I don't think that's the case. I think that this is intentional, and I think that, you know, the only way – there's no way to prove that, but if you just looked at the situation and said, okay – if he was trying to ruin America's reputation and give Iraq back to the terrorists, what would he be doing differently? And I can't come up with anything. I really can't. And it's really, I mean, I think this is kind of the truth about who he is and about his party, too. I mean, I think really in many ways the Democrat Party is completely okay with having the U.S. military humiliated and having any victories or advances that have occurred in Iraq to be gone, because then they can sit back and just blame Bush for the rest of history and say we should never have gone there in the first place. You know, so that, I think they're perfectly fine with letting it fall.
That happens to be the God's honest truth and a shame. And I was listening to The Five last night on Fox, and I'm sorry, it's gotten to the point where even though they claim to be a conservative show, I'm screaming at them going, you bloody idiots. Of all people, I think it was Dana Perino said that, oh, we went in because we thought there were weapons of mass destruction and we didn't find anything. Excuse me, It was MSNBC that reported about the 20, I think it was 20 tons of yellow cake that they took out of there and over a two-year period transferred over to Canada. This was material that could be turned into weapons. What do you mean you tell me you didn't find anything?
Yeah, right. MSNBC, I'm hearing you, Annie.
MSNBC can report this. Then why the heck do you keep on going on that mantra that they didn't find anything there?
Yeah, I can't explain that either. I mean, I know Dana quite well. I think that some things that happen, though, the media works in a strange way, and sometimes things just get repeated so often that it just becomes accepted formula of the way to speak about Iraq, you know, is to say that we thought there were weapons there and we didn't find them. So other than that, I can't explain it because it's not true, you know.
No,
hey, Annie.
Annie. Yes, Thomas.
This is Thomas. Hey, Nick, how are you, my friend?
Pretty good, Thomas. How you doing?
I'm good. I wanted to jump in real quick because I wanted to speak specifically to what Annie just said. Back in 2006, when we were still in Iraq, I was going to ITT Technical School, and our librarian there was from Iraq. Her husband, her husband's father, her father-in-law, had been murdered by Saddam Hussein. So I asked her a question. I said, you know, a lot of American people are saying that we went over to Iraq for the oil. She looked at me and said with a straight face, American people are stupid. This is what she said to me. And then she went on to ask me, she said, do you know what yellow cake is? I said, no. She said, you don't know what it is? She said, uranium, which a lot of people don't know. And I believe to this day, President Bush deliberately fell on a sword to keep this covered up. But Iraq has some of the largest uranium mines in the world. When Valerie Plame and all them guys were talking about the yellow cake going to Niger, that wasn't a lie. That was actually true. But because we were trying to keep that undercover, we had a president who was willing to be seen as a liar rather than reveal what we were trying to do. Kind of the total opposite of what Obama is. President Bush deliberately, he kept it. So he was willing to sacrifice his own reputation for the protection of this nation. So to all those who continually say that weapons of mass destruction wasn't found, we found 500 canisters of ricin nerve gas. So don't tell me. Anyway, I just wanted to add that point, Annie, since you brought up about the yellow cake.
Well, thank you, Thomas. And, you know, try to sell the story. But unless there's people like out there like Thomas, like myself, like the Kel, that keep on countering that story, the truth will never get out there.
Yes, and it's to keep speaking up. It's really so much of what happens in the media is unchallenged, and we really need to keep answering these people.
Yeah, have to keep answering. And when I pull out the MSNBC story, they're like, oh, really? No, that was not on Fox. Fox didn't even carry that story. MSNBC, you know, your liberal media outlet carried the story. So why aren't they repeating the story and countering, you know, the lies? But they're not. They all have to fall on the liberal sword. You know, if it was something against Bush, it's okay to pull it out. But if it's against the liberal administration, they're not going to pull out the big guns. And this is the hypocrisy of what they call journalism. There is no journalism anymore.
No, it's advocacy. That's all it is. And the sooner everybody recognizes that and moves forward, the better. It's ridiculous to continue to claim that the media is objective. It's not. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it shouldn't be. I mean, I just think the idea of an objective media is a ridiculous idea. Everybody's got a point of view, and let's just be honest about it and move forward, you know?
Absolutely. Now, I'm going over some of the stuff that you've been putting out there. There's a movie that I believe it's trying to remember the name, producer Anne McElhenney wants to make, and Hollywood is trying to prevent her from making this. It's the Gosnell movie, and it's something that you just recently came out about and backed.
Well, you know, it's I wouldn't characterize it that Hollywood's trying to get her not to make it. They're just not helping her. And it's a story that Hollywood doesn't want to touch because it's it goes against too many facets of their agenda. But the good news is that Anne and Phelim started this Indiegogo campaign to raise $2.1 million, and we did it. They've got the money, and they're currently in the process of now putting the script and the movie together. So I think the story so far, it proves that you don't have to wait for Hollywood anymore. They're not as powerful at being gatekeepers as they used to be. And, you know, we as free citizens now can go around Hollywood and make movies that don't fit the leftist agenda, which Hollywood will probably never make. Or if they do make it, they won't know they're doing it.
You know, that's a good thing that these independent guys are out there and actually tearing down the doors at Hollywood. Because if anyone's interested in finding out about the movie, they can go to gosnellmovie.com. And are they still taking donations to help with the production?
You know, I don't know if they are or not. I haven't followed it after we reached the goal. I've talked to them a few times, but they may be. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Now, you also just recently came back from a charity tournament with the SAG Foundation. How'd that go? How'd you play?
Oh, pretty well. You know, those charity tournaments are always kind of best ball tournaments where you play in a group and everybody chooses the best shot that any one of the group makes and you move forward that way. So you get a ridiculously low score usually. But and it's hard to know how well you play individually because we're not using, you know, your shot all the time. But I played pretty well, and usually those tournaments are a good fit for me because my golf game can be summed up by saying there are flashes of brilliance that are usually balanced by moments of extreme humiliation and incompetence.
Well, I actually live on a golf course, and my backyard is the 15th hole. But the last time I played, I was in college in 1970 that year, and my girlfriend and I got kicked off because we were sharing clubs. So that was my golf experience.
Yeah.
Well,
no, it's
kinda
a fun game. It's a good lesson in humility for everybody. And, you know, I need that maybe more than anyone else on earth because it's hard for me to be humble.
Now, Kel has a question. Kel, come forward. Kel, where'd you go?
Hi, Annie. I'm right here.
Okay,
and
you had a question.
I want to refer to Nick as Mr. Searcy, but he's such a nice guy. I just want to call him Nick and say, hey, want to come over for a lemonade in my backyard with my family sometime?
That's very nice.
You are such a nice man. But I do have a question.
We always spend a lot of time in North Carolina. So, but we have quite a summer. Maybe we'll stop by.
I was very impressed with From Earth to the Moon. And it was a wonderful series. And you won a Peabody Award for that. It was wonderful. You have also appeared in such movies as Castaway and Fried Green Tomatoes. You are very prolific in your craft. Well, what was it like, though, that you worked with Tom Hanks and you worked with Kathy Bates? These are both renowned liberals, and you are very much a conservative, as it were. You're very much a Republican. What was it like working with people that are such renowned liberals?
Well, you know, you have to remember that when I didn't really work with Kathy Bates that much. I mean, I wasn't in that part of the movie. But also, that was 20 years ago. Tom Hanks' Castaway was
true
probably
enough, yeah.
15 years ago, and things were not so politically charged back then. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It was not as polarized as it is now, and politics wasn't on the tip of everybody's tongue. My personal experience as far as, like, working on sets is that, you know, either they don't talk politics with me because they know what I think and don't want to get into it, or they just are not aware of it and don't bring it up. I mean, I have very rarely gotten into any sort of political discussion on a set. Now, outside of the working environment, I've gotten in some scraps with people, but that was, you know, never while I'm at work. When I go to work, I don't go there to, you know, be on the five or on crossfire and argue with everybody. We're kind of usually
yeah.
there to just sort of make up a fictional story and tell it as best we can, and so I try to keep the focus on that.
Yeah, it's funny because you're just
yeah.
only a year younger than I am, honestly. Now people know how old I am. And
oh,
you
Annie,
up,
you're very young.
But when
a
you
baby.
And I were, you and I grew up,
so
the whole thing.
That means you're about 44, Annie. That's, wow.
For the umpteenth time.
Yeah,
but
you're getting up there.
You and I. Thanks. I still keep my girlish figure. But when you and
yeah.
I were growing up, we went through the whole thing with the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Earth Shoes, global cooling, and then the Vietnam War. The huge thing was the Vietnam War, you know, and Watergate. But that seems like child's play compared to what's going on today. I mean, it seems naive and innocent back then compared to what we're seeing happen today.
Well, you know, I think the difference is that now the reason things are so polarized now is simply because the conservative side of things is speaking up, is fighting back. I mean, back then, during Watergate and the Vietnam War, the leftists were kind of viewed as children, and they weren't taken seriously, and they kind of, you know, the arguments weren't engaged. And now I think, and you know, now that conservatives are willing to argue with liberals, that infuriates them more. And so that's why you get the kind of histrionics you get from, you know, somebody like Senator Reid and Pelosi and all this really outrageous invective that they throw at Republicans. It's simply because we're resisting. Leftists don't like to be resisted. They want to be obeyed.
That's the difference, because unfortunately, I have a leftist in my family. It's my older brother. The rest of us were all conservatives, so I swear that there was a genetic defect when he was born. But yeah, whenever we got into an argument with him, it was either his way or no way. And then I thought it was just an anomaly because it was just his personality. But now, as I'm older and I end up into all these other verbal debates and written debates, I find it's not an anomaly. It's the pattern.
No, it's absolutely a pattern. You can find it throughout history. This is why leftists, throughout history, whenever they get enough power, they start executing their enemies or putting them in gulags. They do it every single time, and they will do it here if they get enough power here. That's what they do. They don't want to be argued with because they can't win the argument. The only way they can win the argument is to remove the opponent.
That's the truth. And conservatives by nature are people that are, you know, like to live their life quietly. We want to just go along to get along. So we're not in the habit of speaking out. We're not in the habit of fighting back. But I would say since 2008, there was a huge wake-up call, and we are finding our voices. And I'm cheered that a lot more people are having the courage to speak out. There was that I'm trying to remember what that Yankee baseball player's name was. I think it was Rodriguez or something. Just the other week, opening day, he refused to go to the opening day because his wife was having a baby. And this man goes on TV and said, you know, I wanted to see the birth. And it reminded me of God and his birth, of his son. and how much he loved the world because he gave his son up to save it. And for someone to go in public and say this, and my husband and I looked at each other and goes, all right, and not a single person stood against him once he said that. People are starting, I believe God, I believe in a conservative message, and they're not afraid anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what it's going to have to take. I mean, we can't, you know, we can't sit around and be polite to these people anymore because they literally want to decimate us in whatever way possible, any means necessary. That's what leftists are like. And we can't sit around and pretend that they're not like that. That's how they are.
And that's the truth. You know, and I'm thinking back to Chuck Hagel's testimony the other day about the Bergdahl swap. And again, I don't know why I put myself through this torture, but I sat and watched part of it. And he was at the point where congressman was asking him, why isn't he back here in the United States? And he started going to this long, elaborate explanation about his medical, his doctors, this and doctors that. And I looked at my husband and I said, he better follow that up with what if you can take a critically injured soldier and ship them from Germany to the United States for treatment, why can't they do that? And he did. And he nailed Hagel on that. And you know what? Last night, Bergdahl returned home. Less than 24 hours after that testimony, he was on a plane coming back here.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I can't watch those hearings myself. It's good that people like you are around to take the pain for me. Because I a lot of people ask me time to time, why don't you go into politics? And basically, I tell them two things. I became an actor because I didn't want to work that much, and it's working out really well. And the other thing is I just don't know if I could sit there and be civil while these people just sit there and lie to your face. I mean, I can't imagine sitting there and not going, look, you're lying. You're absolutely lying, and you're wasting everybody's time. And, you know, how dare you call me a liar? All uproar would, you know, be a lot of uproar, and I don't know if I'd be a good fit for politics.
You mean you do a Joe Wilson?
Yeah, or worse. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, my friend Mark, who I work out with, he's always going, you know, I don't know how these people just keep from just slapping each other. I mean, you know, just like these people just need, it's hard to take them seriously and sit there and listen civilly while they're lying to you. And I think it'd be a better move to just settle it with a fist fight.
You mean like the Japanese diet?
Exactly. I mean, I think that's a better way to run Congress, the way the Japanese do it. Just, you know, let's just throw down, you know.
All right, let's see. I'm trying to imagine now. Michelle Bachmann against Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be no contest. I mean, you know, I think if you basically touch Nancy Pelosi's face, it's going to blow apart. It's stretched so tight.
You know, it's funny because when I first got up on Twitter, shortly after I started the Tea Party here back in, 2009, I used to try to, you know, see who I can get to start following the group so we can get the message out. And I used to threaten to handcuff people to Nancy Pelosi. And I gathered so many followers saying, please don't handcuff me. I was promised to follow you. God, what a nightmare that would be.
Yeah, that's not fair. That's really, that's going too far, man.
Well, the other one, my other favorite one, was threatening to have Michael Moore sit on their lap.
Right, yeah. You're not painting a very pretty picture. I'm sure people just sort of...
Oh, man. Now, all kidding aside, you know, some of the stuff that's been going on lately, and the news is just, the last couple of days, it's just absolutely flabbergasted me. Here they swap Bergdahl for these five terrorists, and there's an article in Fox News that they just put up that this woman, her father was executed by one of these five. A veteran, a CIA operative, was executed, beheaded by one of the five that was sent back.
and never brought to trial for her. And yet we've got a U.S. veteran, a Marine, Tamaresi, sitting in a jail in Mexico for making a wrong turn. But you'll take a traitor, bring him home, and exchange him for a murderer. Now, isn't this more like, you know, Barabbas?
Yeah, it's unexplainable, you know, by any rational person. Nobody could look at that situation and go, well, I understand that, unless you just admit that this is intentional, that he released those five terrorists on purpose. He did it because he wanted to do it. And he's not going to do anything to help the Marine in Mexico because he doesn't want to. It's that simple. And that's the man that we've elected. That's the man that this country put in office. And the real problem going forward is not so much even Obama, because he'll be gone, in a couple of years. It's that we may be facing a world where we have an electorate that will keep putting people like Obama in the White House. And if we do that, there's really, you know, there's not much hope. If we replace Obama with Hillary Clinton, it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah, and a friend of mine, she's with the Bayshore Tea Party out of New Jersey. She started up with this petition called No Rhino 2016, and I built the website for her, which is norhino2016.webs.com. And we've actually, in the 2 months that she started back at the end of March, we've got 64 groups across the nation that are trying to tell the Republican Party, we're not going to tolerate another Jeb Bush. We're not going to tolerate a Chris Christie. We want a solid conservative to run for president, not another Mitt Romney, not another John McCain. And I think
Absolutely, and not only, you know, it's not only just the conservatism, it's also the willingness to fight. McCain was not willing to fight Obama. He was not willing to fight hard. Romney, both Romney and Ryan, in those debates, Romney won the first debate by going after Obama. Everybody said how disrespectful it was, and he backed off for the next two debates, while Obama and Biden in his debate both acted like spoiled brat children. I mean, if my son acted the way Obama or Biden did during a debate, I would take his video games away. It's ridiculous. And yet that's what was praised by the press. You know, Obama's back. He gets his fire back. He was just rude, obnoxious, and a liar. And we've got to have somebody that's going to stand up to these people and call them on it when they act that way, instead of just sitting back and smiling and going, well, I'm above this kind of an argument, you know.
And that's the truth. That is the God-honest truth. And that's the problem. The Republicans here are afraid to get their hands dirty and roll up their sleeves and get down into a slugfest. You know,
Yeah, everybody gets mad at me on Twitter. I mean, I've gotten in fights with moderate Republicans on Twitter because they say, you know, you're just rude. You're just being, you're not helping things by being rude. I go, well, I guess sitting back and just smiling when somebody calls you a racist, that's really helping things. I'm not going to sit there and let them do that to me.
No.
And I don't think anybody else should either. And the only thing that these leftists understand throughout history is power and resistance. You've got to stand up to them or they will run over you.
Yeah, and I actually went after the GOP chair in my own county right after we lost and Lindsey Graham won. And I told him I was extremely angry, I was extremely upset, and I'm also mad that our county GOP did not get involved in the censure of Lindsey Graham. 9 out of the 46 GOPs here in South Carolina, 9 counties, had the courage to go and censure Lindsey Graham. That means
that's
37 had no balls.
I'm interjecting because I'm listening to this, and my blood pressure, Annie, is going through the roof. I am just furious about this. I cannot believe what is going on in the United States with this. And I don't know what to say. And Annie, could I ask Nick another question?
Go ahead, girl.
You betcha. Thanks, babe. Nick, you have asked people not to call you a teabagger, ultra con, or a bigot. And I commend you for that. It's like, please don't do that, because I'm a patriot. I'm an American. I love my country. I want to preserve my country. And please don't, throw ad hominems at me. I have interviewed Annie and myself. We kind of work in conjunction on various shows, but on the Red Fox Blogger, I have interviewed Wild Bill for America. And he came up with a really good strategy regarding the Tea Party, and that is the Tea Teams organization. And that is that you get your neighbors in the kitchen, have some coffee and, some sandwiches, sit around, strategize, and get the word out there that there is a conservative movement, but it's met with so many insults. And you are dealing with this, Nick. How do you deal with this on an everyday basis? And Annie, back to you.
Well, how do I deal with it on an everyday? I insult them right back. I mean, it may not be the best strategy, but that's my strategy. And for the record, that thing where mm-hmm. I didn't really ask anybody not to call me that. What happened was this left-wing website asked me if they could interview me, and I sort of sarcastically said, why do you want to interview me? So that you can call me this in your headlines, so that you can call me a teabagger and a bigot in your headline, because I looked at their website, and all it was slams. So they ran with this thing that I asked them not to call me that. I didn't ask them not to call me that. I told them I knew they would call me that, and that's why I wouldn't give them a stupid interview.
Oh, man. It sounds like someone's going in and out over here. Did I get lost?
Oh, are you having trouble hearing me?
Yeah, no, I was hearing weird sounds coming in the background. It was almost like Skype was knocking someone out or something like that. But, I also run against... Go ahead, Nick.
Go ahead.
All right. I find that whenever someone gets into an argument with me and they start hurling the names, I just take a step back and I say, listen, where did I insult you? Where did I call you a name? Do you want a civil discussion or do you want the mudslinging? And 9 times out of 10, it works. It causes them to back off and act civilly. But,
that's a great strategy, and I think that's great that you do that. It's probably very persuasive. I want mudslinging. That's all I want. I don't want to have a civil discussion with these morons. I want to insult them just as badly or worse than they insult us. And that's what I choose to do with my role in all this. I was telling a friend of mine that was sort of criticizing the way I fight. I go, look, we don't all have to fight the same way. If you don't like the way I fight, don't do it. But we're on the same side. Don't forget that.
That's the most important thing, that we are on the same side. Everyone has a different strategy for the fight, but the main thing is to get out there and fight.
Right.
Hey, Annie.
My strategy is to be a better name caller than they are.
Right.
Thomas, you had a question. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I'm jumping in here again. Here's the thing, and I have the most brutal and humiliating tactic of all, especially for our establishment GOP types, the Lindsey Grahams, the Eric Cantor, who got his tail wiped all across the floor, the whoever else's. Here's the thing. Annie, as I was telling you all on Monday, last Sunday when I spoke at the event I spoke at, I asked, these are all Republicans, I asked them if they knew what the significance of March 20th was. I asked them to raise their hand if they knew. When I told them that it was the 160th founding of the Republican Party in opposition to slavery, that's the legacy of this party. And quite frankly, we have the greatest weapon of all, the race card, that we can use against those who actually are. And you know me, I'm going to be brutally honest. Quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of a lot of white conservatives who sit back when they hear the race title thrown at them, and instead of fighting back, they'll say something or they'll get angry towards certain, you know, black liberals, which they're bad, instead of standing up to those who are saying it. Because most of the time, it's white liberals who are throwing out the race card.
Well, you know,
go ahead, Nick.
Well, Thomas,
yeah,
Nick,
being racist, just being liberals.
Right.
They're allowed to use the race card just because they're liberals. And when, in fact, the liberal progressive agenda throughout history, going back 160 years, has always been race-based. It's always been racist, and it always will be. They are the people who look at people like groups of the same thing rather than individuals.
That is the truth. Now, Nick, people don't understand your family situation, and a lot of people have no idea about mine. You know, growing up, my brother had a best friend, and the kid was a foster kid. And it was a woman that and her husband that took all these kids in only so they can get the government money and the food stamps and everything else that went with that child. So he ended up living in our house. And basically, we unofficially adopted him as a brother. And he would go to church with us and everything else. He was living in our house. He was living with us for 3 months before his foster mother even realized he was not in her home anymore. And
this kid,
recently he had passed away a couple of years ago, and no one knew it. And when my brother found out about it, he tried to claim his body to give him a decent burial, to keep him out of Potter's Field in New York. Do you know not one government agency allowed him to do that? They said, well, he's got a foster sister, and that until we contact her, we can't do anything. And unfortunately, my brother was never able to claim his body and give him the burial that our family, that a member of our family deserved. And this kid was black.
And that's how the government works. That's why it's so important to try to get as many children as you can out of this foster system. When the government is in charge of anything, especially something that large in scope, people's lives are going to be ruined. And you know, that story, that's really a wonderful story in a way that you guys took that child in and helped him, even though it wasn't necessarily your responsibility. You stepped forward and did it. And I think it really, if more people would do that, would just take that step and just stand up and say, you know what, I can take care of one. I'll take one of these kids. You know, I think it would be, the world would be a lot better place.
Yeah, and you have a wonderful story about when you took Omar in. And I was reading it, and I actually started to cry.
Well, you know, the thing with Omar, we did sort of get him out of the foster care system. We got qualified to be foster parents before we adopted because we knew that we wanted to take a child out of the foster care system, having read about it. So it took years to wrench him out of that system. But, you know, thank God that we did it. And, in fact, I think I told Thomas this when I was on the phone with him. We never, the state never really did relinquish his or terminate his parental rights so that he could be adopted. The only way it happened was that I went to his family and asked them to give me permission to adopt him so that, and in exchange, I would stay in touch with them. I would allow, you know, let them know what's going on with Omar, and we would visit them because if the state terminated his rights, of course, they would never have any chance of seeing him again. And so thankfully they were willing to do that. If they hadn't, I don't know that we would have ever gotten Omar out of the foster care system. It's very difficult.
Yeah, I guess God was just working with you in that instance. And how's he doing?
He's doing great. He's 14. He's going through a growth spurt like I've never seen. He's eating everything in the house. He's suddenly taller than my wife. And he's at basketball camp, which is his favorite thing to do. And I don't know. I mean, he's entering the ninth grade next year, and it's a very exciting time. He's excited about you know, going to high school and trying out for the varsity. And, you know, he keeps asking me if – he said, has the NBA ever drafted anybody, like, out of the ninth grade? He's trying to find a way to figure out how to get out of school so he can only play basketball.
Typical kid.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, but he's a great kid. He really is. He's everybody loves him. I mean, parents are always talking to us and saying what a polite, respectful, nice, funny boy Omar is, and you know, that might be the most gratifying thing to hear. Is he's not so great when he's around us, but at least we know that he's polite when he's at other people's houses.
That's the important part. Oh, man.
Yeah.
It reminds me of I can't remember the name of the comic, but it's a husband and wife, and they have a teenage son that's constantly eating them out of house and home, and the shoes are about as big as the car. And that's what you're going through.
Right.
Oh, man. That's when you,
oh,
you
I
see
must
the
say, my daughter always gets short shrift because I'm always talking about Omar. But we have a grown daughter, 24-year-old daughter, who's biological, and she's a gem, too. And she and Omar have a great, great relationship. And she was probably one of the main reasons that we ended up adopting, is because even when she was 10 and 11 years old, she was advocating for it so hard. And she's a gift from God as well.
Wow. You have been truly blessed. Because, you know, you're making me think back to my brother when I was telling about Butch, who was his nickname. We would go out having cocktails, you know, one place or another. And he was always, because he was a year younger than me, but he was always keeping an eye out for me. So if he saw anyone start to harass me or someone who was coming near me that I didn't want near, he was on it like flies on shit. And he would say, leave my sister alone. And here you are, you're talking about the mid to late 70s, and that was not something you occasionally saw. You know, you never thought of a mixed-race family. And he would be there and say, leave her alone. That's my sister. Leave her alone.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And it's, you know, and then they'd have the audacity to say that we're the ones that are the bigots.
Yeah.
And
well, it's really their only recourse. That's their only chance. They can't argue with us. They can't argue with our ideas. So what they have to do is demonize us and call us racist. And that's why it happens so often. That's the only weapon they really have.
Yeah, that's the God's honest truth. And, you know, when I joined New York City Police Department back in the mid-80s, something that I did not expect to see, because, you know, they always say, if you're blue, you're blue. You know, that's how they teach you. You're blue, you're blue. But once you get into the command, all of a sudden then they go to partner you up with someone else, and you hear the person going, I ain't riding with no white girl. It's like, what?
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
You find it in some of the weirdest places, and then you have to sit back and go, okay, how do I respond to this? And finally one girl came up to me, and she goes, she was wearing a $1,000 fox coat. And she comes up to me and she says to me, you don't know what it's like to grow up poor and black. And I'm looking at this coat that would take me probably about 6 months to save money to buy. And here I am wearing a denim Levi's jacket. And I'm looking at her with a $1,000 coat on. I'm going, wait a minute. What end of the economic scale are you looking at? Because I sure as hell can't afford that coat.
Right.
It's amazing how they will hit you with it, and then you just shake your head and go, okay, what's next?
Yeah, it's distressing whenever you find it, but, you know, it's just got to be confronted. It's got to be confronted whenever it happens. Just not let it go.
No, you can't let it go. And, you know, I was patient enough that by the time I did retire, you know, I had the respect of the very same individual who threw the insult, because I just proved, by my actions, I proved who I was and what I was. And that's what we all have to do. When someone starts throwing the insults at us, you know, let the actions speak a lot louder than the words.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, we were talking earlier about Hillary's new book. And I have no idea how this gets to be number one on Amazon, how this gets to be the cover of Time or whatever it is. But this book, the comments that I was getting on it and the lies that were in it, it's just absolutely amazing. Do you think it's going to harm her in her 2016 campaign?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Hillary Clinton can be harmed because basically you have, you know, a certain percentage of the population, whatever it is, that would vote for her if she was, you know, a murderer. They wouldn't care. They don't care any of the facts about her. She's just a Democrat, and they're going to vote for her because the Republicans are evil racists. There's a certain percentage of the country that just believes that. I mean, it may hurt her with independents, and it may hurt, you know, but I personally think at this point, anybody who's paying attention that is not a Democrat has to be able to figure out that these people are liars, and that they don't have the best interests of the country at heart, that they disagree with what the founders intended for this country to be, and they are trying to, as Barack Obama said, fundamentally transform it into something else. I think everybody that's paying attention knows that, and I think the sides are pretty much, the battle lines are drawn, and nothing's going to budge anything one way or the other.
That's may or may not happen, but as far as former Senator Clinton thinking that Lincoln was a senator and then proclaiming on TV that they left the White House broke, I mean, if we can't do something with that,
Well, there was a hashtag on Twitter that everybody was having fun with. Hillary's so poor. And, like, I put up one, Hillary is so poor that she's had to live off government money stolen from the taxpayers for her entire life.
Well, you know, think about it. You know, the government paycheck she was getting, yes, she was living off of government money. You know, and then
yeah.
You know, no one brings up Whitewater. That she was, unless she was a murderer, but no one mentions the Secretary Brown that mysteriously died and all the other individuals in that plane. No one mentions Vince Foster's mysterious death that was tied into the Clintons. So you know, it's very possible that she can do it because she may even be considered a murderer.
Right. And, you know, nobody wants to think about that stuff because of partisan politics. I mean, you have an entire political party that is completely without principle in that regard. They don't care what the person that they are supporting does. They are going to support them because of their ideology. I mean, look at Ted Kennedy. I mean, how that man, how anybody could really stand up and say, I'm proud of voting for Ted Kennedy after what he did to that young girl. I mean, that still remains one of the most shocking things I've ever seen.
Mary Jo Kopechne. Yep.
I remember that very well. You know, when he passed away, I mean, just the sort of sickening praise of what a wonderful man he was, you know, coming from the Democrats. I mean, you know, I mean, when you have... You're basically, when you get into a situation like that, you're trying to talk mathematics with a party that doesn't believe that 2 + 2 = 4. You know, you can't, there's no common ground there.
No, that's called common core.
Right. That's common core is all about changing facts and, you know, and just sort of making, confusing everybody. And that's what leftists do. They thrive on chaos and misinformation, and that's what they do constantly in every walk of life.
Now, it's funny because mentioning Common Core, there's this new TV ads out, and they show all these kids, and they're telling the kids to grow up and become engineers. And I'm watching them do all these fantastic projects on TV, and then the commercial that came right after that was a commercial promoting Common Core. And I'm going, uh-huh, the next rocket to the moon. That's going to work real well, won't it?
Right.
See, I don't want these kids designing the next car I'm going to be buying to drive. Oh, man.
No.
And what's up with these driverless cars now they're trying to invent?
Yeah, that's you've got me on that one. I haven't been following the driverless cars. I'm worried about Omar getting his license in a couple of years.
Well, your son
with drivers in them.
Your son, I believe, is the same age as my nephew, so they'll end up on the road together. Oy vey, what a sight that's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I believe it was Toyota. Kel, am I right or wrong? Is it Toyota that designed the driverless cars that they're trying to promote now?
Yeah, it was Toyota. Yep, absolutely, Annie, you're correct.
And that scares me. We've got the NSA going into our phones and our email accounts and our websites. What is going to stop them from getting into the vehicle computer bank and then controlling where you drive?
Right.
Well, you know, it's going to be an issue of black boxes, and they're going to know when we went to the Walmart or to the Zayers or wherever. These cars are equipped with black boxes. This is 1984 George Orwell all over again.
Wow.
Yeah, the only thing is missing is the rat in the cage strapped over your face.
Bingo.
Yeah, it is. It's very, very scary. And I'm watching people get in these cars and test drive them, and I'm going, number one, I have no control over this vehicle. Number two, I have no control over the other vehicles around me. And number three, I just stepped into a death trap. And it did not make me feel comfortable in the least bit.
Yeah.
It is one of the most scariest things
I
ever saw.
Yeah, it's scariness out there. It's I can't remember the name of that politician in the United States that said that she looked out her window and a drone flew to her face.
Oh, no. No, I missed on that one. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember her name, but she is in the Obama cabinet. And she said that, yeah, a drone flew into my face and then it crashed. Annie, I'll bring that up for Tuesday.
Oh, that sounds
Dianne
like a good one.
Feinstein, thank you, Luchadora. Dianne Feinstein, yep. She was looking out her window and a drone was staring at her.
I guess it wasn't her order from Amazon.com, huh?
I guess not.
It was Hillary's book. Amazon was delivering Hillary's book.
Yeah, but you were talking about Hillary's book and how she's so hard put out and how it cost her all sorts of money. And Nick, you must find this appalling, being such an active member of the United States of America and speaking up for the United States of America, when you come across these stories, and of course, our poor little Hillary, hard done by, this must really, really make your head spin.
You know, I just try to approach it with humor. And the left in this country has used ridicule against the conservative side of things for years. It's permeated pop culture. I mean, the Saturday Night Live stuff. They've always gone after Republicans and conservatives. They never go after Democrats. So I just try to make fun of them. You know, I don't have a very large audience, but I have a few people that listen to what I say because of what I do for a living. So, you know, I just try to make fun of them because they're ridiculous. And anybody can see that they're ridiculous if they're just paying attention. So when Hillary says, you know, how poor she was, I just try to ridicule her, you know. and you know, when obvious lies are exposed, I try to pull them up and show everybody by making fun of these people. And then you'll find that liberals cannot stand to be made fun of. It really, because they think they're so smart, and they think they're so much superior to you, and so much more compassionate than you are, and so much less racist than you are, that when you ridicule them and you treat them and you approach them with sarcasm, they get furious. They lose their minds, and that's that's what I try to do with it. And it also keeps me sane, too. You know, I can't sit around and be upset and outraged all the time. I just make fun of them.
Humor is the best medicine.
What is my favorite phrase I love to say? You have to piss off at least one liberal a day. That was the New Year's resolution.
Oh, yeah, Annie, absolutely. If you don't piss off at least one liberal a day, your work is not done.
Right. You know, it's a civic duty.
You know, it's funny because, you know, they've got all these new electric cars, these little tiny cars, right? They look like, you know, soap boxes. And I love walking up to people that, you know, are driving around in them, and I look at them and I say, where do you put the dog and the kids, much less your groceries? It always gets them mad. And, of course, they come out with these cloth bags instead of going with the plastic bag or the paper bag. They all have these cloth bags that the logo was painted using lead paint. It's like, how's that working for you? I just, you have to do it. If you see a Obama sticker on it, it's like, how's that working for you now, huh? It's just, you have to do that little tweak.
Yeah. Well, Ann, I hate to break this up, but I'm going to have to run. I have to rescue my son from basketball camp where he's being forced to do things like run suicides and make jump shots and stuff like that. So it's been a pleasure talking to all of you.
All right, just before you go, you have a new project coming up with the United Federation Fighting?
You know, I have a show that I'm working on that's a show about professional wrestlers that some friends of mine and I are trying to put together. And, you know, there's a few things coming out that I have in the can. There's a movie that's going to be released in October called Greater, G-R-E-A-T-E-R, and it's a really nice faith-based film, a true story about a football player at the University of Arkansas who was killed in a car accident in 1998. But it sounds like a real downer, but it's a really powerful and uplifting story, and I can't wait for it to come out. I'm really excited about it.
Well, good luck on that.
I want to thank you, Annie, for allowing me to be part of the program tonight. I'm Kel Fritzy of the Red Fox Blogger, and Annie and I are very, very, very good friends. And, Nick, it was an honor to speak with you, sir, tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie.
It
was my pleasure.
And, Nick, you're welcome back anytime.
Okay, Ann. Thanks so much.
All right. That was Nick Searcy, and his website is nickcearcy.com. Take a look at it. He's got some great stuff up there. He also has some of his DVDs up there. Check it out, nickcearcy.com. He's also up on Twitter as Yes Nick Searcy. So check him out there. Kel, I mean, there's so much more we have to go through, but are you willing to stay with me for a little longer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, baby.
All right.
Want to talk about
day.
The hermaphrodite?
Today is the first day we've actually been 2 hours. Yes, Thomas.
Annie, what do I look like?
Thomas.
Stop
living? You know what? I was remiss in saying hello to Thomas. Hi, Thomas. How are you?
Wow, y'all just leave me out in the... just leave me out there to dry. But that's okay. I know y'all love me anyway, so it's all good.
You know what it's like when the girls get gaggling.
Well,
and
you know.
It's really hard when Annie and I get together. It's kind of like this is what we end up with.
Well, Kel, you will absolutely love our guest that we're going to have on Tuesday. Tuesday is my friend Mike Cutler, and you probably see him up a lot on Fox News and a bunch of others talking immigration.
Right.
And
I still have to call him because he wanted to talk to me. You remember last time you had him on and he told you to give me his information. I still haven't called him yet.
Well,
so.
He may end up be with a show of his own, a TV show of his own. He's working on something, an independent TV station. But Mike, I actually knew him without knowing him years before, during the 80s
right.
when I was a police officer in Brooklyn.
he was working in the borough, and so I would cross paths with him, but never, you know, personally talk to him or anything. Probably just a couple of words in passing, saying hi, how you doing, type of thing. But when we had the first South Carolina Tea Party convention up in Myrtle Beach, the very first one 4 years ago, he was there speaking, and I'm listening to his voice, and I'm looking at him, and I'm going, I know this guy. I know this guy. And then I walked up to him, and I says, you know, I do know you. I know, I can't place it. And then as we started to talk, I realized, damn, that was the ICE agent that used to run all over the place, and we kept on tripping over him. And a lot of cases that he worked on, somewhere along the way I would be involved, whether or not it was as a patrol officer or helping with paperwork or whatever. But it turns out, you know, we are now very, very good friends, and he is a nut job, Kel. He is an absolute nut job, because when talked to him last night, I had mentioned that I was watching The Five with Bob Beckel talking about his blind date, and it went downhill from there. And you know the size of Bob Beckel? It just was, I'm telling you, if we start to talk about Bob Beckel with him, forget about it. You're going to be on the floor. Can you imagine yourself? He had this pretty woman, very pretty woman, on a blind date, and having Bob Beckel, this huge guy, sitting next to you. She's a conservative. He's a Democrat. That must have made one heck of an interesting evening.
Oh, it's amazing. I don't even want to imagine what the marriage room it looks like. How'd you vote today, honey?
You know, we were talking about the man in the boat being backwards. I actually have a friend of mine, her husband decided to go through that. You know, here they raised a family, they have grandchildren, they own a local business, a bar, restaurant, and a number of years ago, he started walking into the place wearing nail polish. And I just thought, you know, he was a joker. He was always someone, you know, pulling practical jokes.
Yeah, just goofing off.
Yeah. Well, he went to, I believe it was Thailand he went to have the surgery. But now, all you have to do is get hired by the city of Miami Beach, and you can have it done.
And now, coming to a town near you, your free sex change, courtesy of Obamacare. Tony is now Tanya.
And they say it's necessary because it's considered a mental disease. Well, aren't you trying to work to cure a mental disease, not to propagate it? Huh?
I think it was the DMS 5 that they de-indexed homosexuality as a mental disease. And now, hey, everything's groovy, people. And your kids in kindergarten can learn all about alternate lifestyles. It's just lovely. This is what Common Core is doing, too. Like, this is insanity.
Yeah, there was an article about a video. Planned Parenthood has been putting out these videos teaching, actually they had a sting operation. Someone went into one of the Planned Parenthood clinics and videotaped as this woman was counseling this alleged 14-year-old girl. And the girl was talking to her about having multiple partners, about sadomasochism, and this woman is talking to her as if it was the best thing in the possible world, the sadomasochists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the mass insanity going on in the United States. And believe me, the United States is not, you know, the only country experiencing this. It's happening in Canada. It's happening in the United Kingdom. It's happening in Australia. And it's like they are literally teaching courses to kids that are 6, 7 years old. And we're seeing kids saying, at the age of 6, 7 years old, I'm a boy, but I feel like a girl, so I'm going to dress as a girl. And they go to school and they wear dresses. It's like, you know, when I was growing up, I'd be slapped silly sideways to Sunday. But now today, it's like, oh, you know, it is just so, you know, bloody fantastic. It's like, oh, you're recognizing your sexuality. Like, the kid is 6 years old.
Yeah, I'm wondering what they would have thought of me, because not only did I play with dolls and tea sets, but I also played with army soldiers, skateboards. You know, my parents just said, you know, you're kids. Kids are kids. Let them, you know, be kids. But today,
yeah,
these kids now have to be mini adults. They have to be more adult than the adult. And this is...
Oh, yeah.
I shake my head. You know, they tell them, you got to wear all this extra padding to play tag football. Well, heck, kids are supposed to fall down and skin their knees.
Oh, yeah.
But no. God forbid, you know, they fall off the swing set or the seesaw, or they get bopped in the head with the basketball or something like that. You know, you can't even play dodgeball.
No, you can't. You can't play dodgeball because you're going to hurt the people. You know, you're going to hurt your little people in the schoolyard. When I was a kid, I was out the door at 7:30 in the morning. Like, this is when we were on summer recess. And I was out the door 7:30 in the morning and running around with my friends, and we were climbing trees, and our parents wouldn't see us until they turned on the lights and called us in for supper. We were gone for like 8 hours, and we rode bikes without the bicycle helmets. Now it's mandatory in the United States and Canada. Your kid has to wear a bicycle helmet. They are treated like they're Humpty Dumpty, and they don't want them to fall off a wall or something. It's just, it's crazy. It's crazy, Annie. And I was talking with some friends about this, and they were like, oh, I have to get my kids their knee pads. Like, well, for what? Oh, they're going off to play soccer. It's like, what? Knee pads? Are you kidding me?
Oh, man, I had my
God,
knee
Thomas
kicked
and
in.
Thomas and Annie, I implore you.
Oh, man. Yeah, growing up, my girlfriend and I would go out into the woods and pick wild blueberries and bring them home so my mom could make blueberry muffins. But half the time, by the time we got to the house, there was probably only a handful of blueberries left in the grocery bag. You know, kids are meant to go out and get the fresh air and run and scrape and make friends and get into fights. Yeah, that's what part of growing up is. It molds the character. But now it's, oh, no, you can't do this and you can't do that. You can't even keep score in a Little League game.
Oh, I know. Oh, Annie, that one really gets to me. The kids, they show up at their basketball games or their baseball games or their soccer games, and they don't keep score, and everybody gets a ribbon just for showing up. And I mean, like, some of the kids, they're clued up, and they turn to their parents, and you know, Johnny will turn to Dad and say, "Hey, you know what? I got that score, and I deserve a point for that." But no. I'm sorry, Johnny. We don't keep score anymore, and everybody gets a ribbon for showing up. Oh, my God.
They're teaching their kids that there are no winners and no losers, but that's not how life goes. You know, we have elections that have winners and losers. If you're telling me if I'm running in a foot race and I beat you and I get to the finish line before you do that there's no winner or losers, then why am I fighting so hard to run? That's what they're doing. They're taking away the kids' will to compete and to fight for what they believe in. Instead,
absolutely.
It's like everyone, you take the test, and no matter whether or not you got the answers right or wrong, everyone passes. That's not how it works. Every time they try that in the classroom, the ones that were working really, really super hard will stop working. And then everyone.
What really bothers me is that it's reinforced. And it's happening in our school system, and that it's happening in our parental system. And it is very unfortunate in that children are not learning that you can lose. And if you lose, you have to work harder. Every child is taught that you're a winner, but no, you're not. Not every child is a winner in certain categories. You failed at something, try again, you know, Bob's your uncle, thank you for playing. What they're being taught instead is that, oh, don't worry, you're still a winner. Like this is, you know, the ribbon for showing up. This is the result of Hillary Clinton, I think. Every village raises a child sort of a mentality. But that's
every
not
village
it.
Raises a child idiot.
Yeah. But you know what? Hillary, keep your bloody hands off my kid. I'm raising my kid. And if my kid comes home with an F in math, I'm going to say, well, you failed, and you're going to have to try harder. But now kids are coming home, and they're getting a 50% mark, a pass. And it's like, no, my child did not deserve that mark. He or she failed math, and they're going to summer school to rectify it. But they don't even do that anymore, Annie.
Now, that's the truth, because it used to be when we were growing up, if you ended up in summer school, everyone knew it. And you basically got shamed into doing better. And that's the whole thing. We don't shame people anymore. Thomas, you're back on the line, and you're making a lot of noise in the background. Thomas, you with us?
Sorry about that. I'm outside.
Oh, all right. That's what all the noise was.
What are you doing out there, Thomas?
Hello.
He's getting a suntan.
I am. Yep. I am headed to Kansas City, so I'm just going to listen on mute while you guys chat away.
All right.
Thanks, Thomas.
All right.
Thomas, always a pleasure to speak with you, and your radio program is fantastic, by the way, sir.
Well, he's right now he's up on mute, so he's listening in. Thomas is in the evening of True Radio. Check him out, Invisible Conservative.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a good show. He also has a couple other people that host on his show also. So as we were saying, you know, this mollycoddling of our kids, the mollycoddling of our society, how are we going to be innovative? How are we going to make all these new innovations, inventions, new industries, if everyone is saying, all right, you know, just do your mediocre job. Government was here to take care of the rest of you. We never would have had home computers. We never would have had cars. We wouldn't have had half the stuff that we have. We wouldn't have had any of the stuff we had today if no one strived.
And what we have to do, too, is that we have to get our kids out of the basements, away from the computers, get them on the bikes without helmets, and let them fall off them, scrape their knees, pick up the pieces, and, you know, man up to their growing into adulthood. And we have to stop mollycoddling, like you say, Annie, our children, and tell them, look, you went to a soccer match and you lost. And we have to stop the scoreless proposition. That is ridiculous. Like, you know, when I was younger, I took my brothers to their hockey practices and then their hockey games, and it would be 3-2, and, you know, my brothers lost their hockey game. And that's how it is. You lost, okay? You lost. Now, today, we have to stop the scoreless in the sports, because the kids are kind of figuring out that, well, you know, I made a really good move in the hockey game, but it's scoreless. It's like, it's, Annie, this is just mass, it's mass insanity. And we have to ensure that we put a backbone in our children, because this is our future. Do you really want your mollycoddled child to be running your house or your Congress one day? This is what we're facing, Annie.
Well, they want the elite only to go for those offices, and the rest of the people just shut up and accept what's going to happen to them. And it makes us sheep, basically sheep. Well, excuse me, there are wolves out there, and the wolves will decimate the sheep. And that's what we've got right now, when we've got to go and slaughter the wolves. And we got to turn around and get some cojones and start fighting back. You know, you have the children out there are growing up, and under Common Core, generations of our youth will be lost in the future. Generations of leadership will be lost in the future. And the only ones that will be leading us are the ones that are looking to destroy us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always say, Annie and I, we speak a lot. And I always say to Annie that I live in Canada. I live in the best nation on the planet. But I recognize that the United States of America is the greatest nation on the planet. And as America goes, so does the rest of us.
Yeah, it's funny because I had Arthur Mikhail Nisson on, and he has a book out. Remind me, I'll email it to you, which he has up on the Internet for free, called Manipulism. And it speaks about how he grew up in Europe under the European socialism, and how he always, mm-hmm. always thought that that was the greatest thing possible, that his country was the greatest thing possible. And then he started traveling around the world. He went to Australia. He came here to the United States, and his eyes were opened. His eyes were opened, and he realized that our way, the American way, and he saw us being destroyed from inside. And he wrote the book to describe how they tear our society down. Anyone, just Google the word Manipulism, and you can download his book for free in PDF form. And the last time he was on here, he was almost completely in tears. You can hear him choking back because he said exactly what you said. As the United States goes, so goes the rest
of
the world.
So does the rest of us. The Western world will, it will be a domino effect. If we let the United States down, and I don't mean the usurper in the People's House right now, but if we lose the United States, we're going to lose the West. The United States is the glue that holds all of us together. And Annie is totally correct. And I do suggest that you download that PDF file and read that. And it is unbelievable that the entities out there, the outside entities that can really, truly, totally, and conclusively take us down, this is unacceptable. Annie is in the United States. Kelly is in Canada. We are cohesive, and we are speaking with you and saying enough is enough. We have to stand up. We have to stand up for America, Canada, Europe, Australia, the UK in particular, because they're under siege right now. We have to stand up, and we have to be a voice. We need the Tea Party. We need people like Mr. Searcy. We need people like Wild Bill for America. We need all of us to get together and protect
You're crying.
Yeah, protect
us. I can hear it.
Yeah.
And the problem is with this administration, they have let so many of our allies down. England, Israel, and right now, our president has turned around to Iraq and told Iraq to get their act together when it was his very actions that have led to the situation there now. And you wonder why we were talking about the yellow cake in Iraq. Did anyone ask why Iran was so interested in Iraq? And here Obama is allowing Iran to proceed with their nuclear plans? Duh! And smell the coffee, folks. These were all deliberate actions. Iran wanted those minerals. They wanted that yellow cake. They needed to build the bomb to launch on Israel and to launch on us. We are the great Satan to them. And unless we wake up and stand side by side, church by church, citizen by citizen, stand and defend what our forefathers brought forth, I am getting very upset, and I'm looking at the stuff that's going on these last few days, and I'm wondering, I'm wondering, am I losing the fight? Are the rest of us out there just too chicken to get into the fight? We have to. We have to. We've got to raise our voices one person at a time. We've got to get a hold of our elected officials and tell them enough is enough. And we've got to look at this 2016 election and say, we've got to clean out the White House. We've got to clean out the Senate and the House of Representatives.
You've got to fumigate the White House.
And we have to start grassroots level all the way up to the very top. There's not much time left, folks. Not much time at all. Oh, man. There's so much more that we can go into. You know, the way we're treating our veterans, the VA hospitals. I mean, I've said this before. I sometimes wonder if my father would have lived a few more years had he gotten care in time. He died because of a heart condition. My mother called me one time before he passed away. He was waiting to have surgery for a valve replacement. And it was critical he has this valve replacement. The VA hospital told him, come back in 2 months. So I'm wondering, had he had that surgery right then and there when he needed it immediately, would he still be here today? So it's happening right in your own backyards, folks. I'm sure each and every one of you know of a veteran somewhere. Ask them about it. There are some good stories with some of the VA hospitals. There's a lot of bad ones, too.
Thomas, I would like to speak with you on RFB at some point down the road. But Annie is totally out of time. Annie, we're done. It's done. It's over.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for having me as a guest co-host. It's been fantastic. And wow. Annie and I, we will be back together. And we will create havoc again.
As always, Kel. As a matter of fact, I got my phone bill in, and I'm looking at this long-distance charge. I'm going, what do I have a long-distance charge for? I says, I have
international non-long-distance charge calling, Annie.
Because I put the phone number up, and I see, and I says, oh, shit, it's a Canada call. Okay, all right, I know who that is.
But, yeah, you know what? What we really need, we need more female voices. We are conservative ladies. And ladies and gentlemen, conservative ladies are really, really hot. So tune into these programs. And, Annie, I'll see you again on Tuesday.
All right. And you got a show on tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing a tribute to the fallen Royal Canadian Mounted Police that were slaughtered in New Brunswick tonight.
Okay, and what time is that?
7 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, I'll try to remember to show up there. Well, I want to welcome everyone for listening in the chat room and online, and we'll be back Tuesday with Mike Cutler and Talking Immigration. So until then, have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend. Good night, and God bless.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up. Trouble
you've
face.
Been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense, the proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone.